This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Antler Up podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we got a great show for you all today. You're listening to the Antler Up podcast, where we dive into archery, hunting, and the mindset needed to elevate your game. Join us as we explore the latest strategies and gear to help you become the best hunter you can be, both in and out of the woods. Tethered is a team of saddle hunting fanatics with a passionate addiction to whitetail hunting. Designing and engineering products to be a more efficient and confident hunter, Tethered produces the most mobile, stealthy, and safest elevated hunting gear on the planet. Built by saddle hunters for the saddle hunter. Head over to tetherednation.com to see for yourself what exactly I'm talking about. When you hit the woods, there's no room for second-rate gear. That's why I trust Huntworth. They build high-performance hunting gear that keeps you concealed, comfortable, and locked in without the ridiculous price tag. Whether it's lightweight gear for those sweaty September sits, rock-solid mid-season layers, or insulated late-season killers, Huntworth has the lineup to keep you grinding all year long. And every season, they're dropping new gear that's built for serious hunters who demand more out of what they wear. So if you're tired of paying for a logo instead of performance, it's time to upgrade. Head over to huntworthgear.com, check out the full lineup, and hunt prepared, hunt hard, hunt with Huntworth. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Antler Up podcast. And on the other line, I'm joined by Elizabeth Klieg from the NDA. She is your Director of Hunter Recruitment. She also oversees the Field to Fork program and many other programs there at the NDA. Elizabeth, thanks for coming on tonight's show.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome to see. We were just chatting off air. Someone, obviously, I love talking to individuals from the state of Pennsylvania, and obviously with the state being a nice big size, I always enjoy getting a chance to talk to other individuals where I know exactly where they live or like where they're from, because I could relate or might have a story, something to that. Because like I said, we're the neck of the woods where you're at is where my older sister lives. She's like my best friend, someone I look up to. So we get a chance to see her and everything. So it's just nice to be able to, even though we've never met before, it's like a familiar face because I know you're in that neck of the woods and that sort of thing, if that makes sense. But it's just how I interpret things, I guess you could kind of say, being a teacher and stuff. But, you know, I'm excited to have you on and we could talk a little bit about your role and everything like that to continue the series of the NDA. So with you coming on, Elizabeth, you know, how many years now, I've asked all the guests so far, I know you've held this role for quite a few years already now, and you know, you've kind of gone on to that Director of Hunter Recruitment. How many years have you been with the NDA now?
This September, so just like about a month from now, I'll be 3 years in.
Awesome.
But I've been in this particular role for just 1 year.
Right. So when, I guess, explain like your overall role of like what your data, you don't have to say what your day-to-day duties are, but like what's your overall goal with your position at the NDA?
So I oversee the Field to Fork program, which is our mentored Learn to Hunt program for adults. And I oversee all aspects of that. And it's actually, you know, even though hunting season is just a short portion of the year, the duties that relate to, you know, going into and planning all that, they occur year round, all the planning of events and just communications with people who are interested in hosting and all that sort of thing. And we have educational materials that we produced, Deer Hunting 101. So we like to keep that updated. And there's all parts of this job that aren't necessarily directly Field to Fork related, but, you know, support the overall mission of hunter recruitment and getting people to think of a deer as a food source.
Right. Actually, it's funny you say that, because today, two of my colleagues, in different facets, in different ways, both just said, he was talking to his dietitian. He does some really awesome work, and he's a workout fiend, and he just likes to work with people just to check his blood work and everything along those lines. And he's like, man, you just need to go out there and hunt for your food and consume. And he's like, Jeremy, I know I don't have to say that to you. And I said, yeah, Brett, you know, like, it was funny to hear his side of things. And then another colleague, we're discussing certain things regarding blood work and things along those lines of red blood cells. And the individual was talking about how, you know, how they've just been pounding protein and getting red meat. And I said, hey, I have some extra, you know, venison that I'd be more than happy to give you if you're looking for some and would like to try them. She's like, absolutely. So, you know, it was kind of cool in one day, and we just started school again, people talking like that. So tomorrow I'm going to bring in some couple packages for people. It helps me clear out my freezer for a little bit to bring in some new meat, hopefully here in the next couple weeks. So, that's awesome to hear though. And I want to ask you this, Elizabeth, how did you get into this role and grow into that position? Like, how did you start, basically? Because I'm sure you told the story hundreds of times, but, you know, I'm just interested in hearing, like, just how you got into that position, like that aha moment, basically.
Yeah, I have told it 100 times, but I like to, because it's a fun story. So a few years ago, I was looking to transition into work that resonated with me more. I was doing video editing at the time. And, you know, I'm someone who loves the outdoors. I didn't know about conservation job board or places like this. So I was looking on Indeed and places like that. But I wrote down on a piece of paper what I was looking for in a job. And at the same time, I had been teaching a lot of foraging classes on the side,
Okay.
You know, wild plants, mushrooms and things. And I have a background in primitive skills, but I was kind of getting burned on that. I wanted to teach something new. And, you know, I just asked myself, you know, what do I really want to teach? And I was introduced to hunting as an adult, and I wanted to reach others who came from a similar background, because hunting isn't typically something you get into unless you know someone who does it, especially a family member. But what if you don't have that? I didn't have that. So I was starting to piece together an intro to hunting course just to give people a taste of what hunting really entails, what it's really about. And I'm job searching too at the same time, not connecting these two trains of thought at all. And I'm on Indeed and all these usual places. I wasn't seeing anything that really resonated with me. So a couple days later, after I wrote down that list of things on that piece of paper, this thought pops into my head: go look at the National Deer Association's employment page. And I wasn't even sure there was one, because I'd never been on there. I've been on the website, but I hadn't looked for employment. But I'm the kind of person who likes to follow my instincts. And so, you know, that voice popped into my head and I said, I'm going to that page. And to my surprise, they had just posted a job for the area where I live, Southeast Pennsylvania, doing exactly the things that I wanted to do with my intro to hunting course, but even beyond it, because they're pairing it with mentoring. And I'm reading down the job description and the qualities they're looking for, it sounded like they were describing me. And so I got really excited and I applied, and here I am. And then 2 years after that, my boss stepped down. He went off into a different field entirely, and I got promoted. So here I am.
That's pretty awesome. Isn't it funny how the world just seems to sometimes talk to you, like in weird ways? And like you just said, you had that voice in your head to tell you to do that. And when you're reading something, you're like, that's me. And what I find really cool is a way what you just said, you were doing some video editing and everything along those lines, and how you're probably able, and you can tell me I'm wrong, but you're probably able to bring that attributes and that, you know, that past work life in a sense into what you're doing now. Because I told Kip this on Kip's episode, you guys do such a really good job of video explaining things on the videos, and just step by step and those types of things, which I'm sure you're able to bring to the table when that day comes.
Yeah, that was another thing that, looking at my work history, it seemed so random, like I was all over the place. And this job pulled all those things into one, like it all makes sense now. Like I can use all those skills in one place now.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, being a part of that program and introducing, like you said, other adults into hunting, and and like you said, it can be very daunting for individuals that don't have someone, and to have a program where this, you know, not only gets people out there, but educates them in the right way. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of emotions that you see from that new hunter that stick with you. You know, would you be able to maybe think back to an opportunity or a specific time where you're like, man, you came home, you took your shoes off, you sat down, and you're just like, that was awesome. And like, I love what I do because of that moment. Like, do you have a opportunity that you'd be able to share something like that?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is a hunter who came through our program named Nina. And we actually did a little documentary about her. It's on our YouTube. But she really, really struggled in the program to get a deer. And she kept returning and returning, and she's watching everyone else get deer, and she's multiple years trying to get a deer and just couldn't make it happen. And we're filming this documentary, and we had one hunt left that we could film. And, you know, I had a blind in mind where I wanted to put her, and when I showed up, someone had put her somewhere else. And I thought, oh no, like, well, what if they put her in the right spot? You know, what if that's the right spot? And I had to make this really fast decision. I thought, oh man. And I just went with, you know, instinct again. I was like, I'm going to put her back in the place where I wanted to put her originally. And I said, Nina, if you get a deer, I have to be the first person you call, because we have to scramble and get the cameraman over there. And, you know, wouldn't you know it, she's the first hunter of the day to get a deer. And it was just, it was so cool. And she calls me and she's shaking and, Elizabeth, I got a deer. And her mom was there, and her mom had harvested her first deer at 71 years of age the year before in the Field of Fork program. And so I got to see that moment where they saw each other after Nina knew that she'd gotten this deer. And it was just, it was super sweet. And we got along on film, and definitely check it out on YouTube if you haven't already. It was really cool. And now she comes back every year as a mentor. So that's what we want to happen.
I was going to just ask you that, like, after that, you were finishing up, like, how many times do people, does it click for them? They embrace this lifestyle in a sense, and they want to come back and be a part of it in some way, whether it be a mentor, or is there other ways that these people come back and help out?
Yeah, there's a number of ways people can come back. So some, you know, every Field of Fork event is different, and it depends kind of what the host has going on. But like in some places, I mean, anywhere almost, you can come back and mentor. But some places will have like work days that you can come back and, you know, trim lanes and put up stands and stuff. And for most of those people, that's going to be the first time they do that. So they're contributing, they're giving back, but they're also learning at the same time. We have, you know, potlucks and various get-togethers like that throughout the year.
That's awesome. You know, so to look at it as a whole, you know, obviously, like I said, you're the director of hunter recruitment. Why is hunter recruitment such a critical issue right now?
So, well, we have this phrase, you know, hunting is conservation. And if we want that to continue, we're going to need more hunters, basically. We have this aging population of hunters. We want to make sure that they're passing that on to the next generation so that we can continue to have the things that we love, you know, all the things that hunting is, you know, healthy habitat, healthy deer. It's like our mission statement, the NDA, ensuring the future of wild deer, wildlife habitat, and hunting. And we're doing that in our little department through mentor or through hunter recruitment. And yeah, it's just, it's an enjoyable way to do it. And, you know, we're just trying to make sure that future that we want to enjoy is there for everyone to enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And cause I always feel like it's like a mixed bag. So like what, cause you're at the forefront of it. Like what does the data show about where hunter numbers are headed if we don't have programs like the one you're spearheading and other, what other states are doing as well? Like what does that data show if we don't do that?
Well, we have that baby boomer generation that's probably the largest segment of the hunting population. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just statistics. Once people reach a certain age, they just stop hunting.
Right.
So we just need to make sure that, you know, we have some people coming up in the ranks to replace them and keep a good thing going.
So here's what I want you to do for me. How can someone like myself that is limited on time, you know, enjoys every bit with my friends, my family, to go out and do hunts, even solo, right? And do certain trips. And I've been saying this now for so long. I love being able to take my daughter out. She's 11, and this is her last year on her mentor license. And then because I spread it out for her, and now, you know, hopefully the goal is come next year, she could take, when she turns 12, she could take her actual hunting license test and everything. And so with that, I always feel like I do a really crappy job with trying to introduce hunting to new people or bring someone on that maybe has done it, but it's been a couple years. How can I do a better job of that? Like, do you ever get asked that, like, from other individuals? Because I feel like I just do a crappy job of that.
You're talking about being the one who's recruiting, essentially?
Like, not necessarily recruiting, but in a way of, like, I don't know, like, I always have it in me that I want to take somebody. However, I make that excuse of, like, I don't have the time. Type of ordeal, or yeah. Like, this is the weekend that I'm going with my buddies, or this is the weekend where I finally get a chance to go hunt here, instead of like taking a step back and doing something more meaningful, like taking someone new out or something along those lines.
Right. Well, if it's something you really want to do, I would say just put it in your calendar. If you're not going to an actual Field the Fork event, if you're just doing it on your own, yeah, just say like, you know, this is the weekend I'm going to take someone new. And, you know, there it is. And you'll get a little reminder in your phone. And there it is.
Just do it, right? Just like anything else in life, you just got to do it. You got to just suck it up and do it. I like that. So I like that you brought up some of the age factors. So what do you see as the biggest barriers for someone stepping into this and into hunting in general?
Generally, we tend to look at, you know, the availability of mentors or, you know, limited access. But I think the bigger issue really is just the perception of barriers. I think the barriers themselves aren't as big as people make them out to be, but the mental game kind of gets in the way. So like even after someone goes through our program, they might tell themselves like, okay, you know, I hunted this one property, but I it's not public. I can't just come back here. There's nowhere for me to go. And I'll, you know, bring up Onyx and like point out 10 places within, you know, an hour of their house. And it's like, oh, okay, there are places I can go. So I just like to remind people of, you know, the resources that are around them. There's a lot of places you can go, even on public land. Sometimes people have this idea that it's so overrun with people that you're never going to get a deer or you're going to be competing with other people. But there absolutely are public land parcels everywhere where you can still go. Even in the most populated areas of the state, you can find places on those pieces of land that no one is going. And people tell me that all the time. They're like, yeah, I find a spot and I didn't see a single other hunter. And this is supposed to be one of these like places where everyone goes. But I mean, maybe everyone is going there, but they're staying right by the trail. They're not venturing off. You know, you just got to put in a little bit more miles maybe. But yeah.
It's very capable. So let me ask you this. So would you be able to give me, and you talked about it already a little bit, but like the mission behind Field to Fork, is there a way that like, since you've taken over now, like you said, you've been doing it for a couple years, is there a way that you've blended like your own purpose behind it? Do you know what I'm saying? Like you're like, I believe in this mission, but like you are doing something on your own love and your own, like what you're taking it and making it your own. Do you have some sort of like the main mission behind it for like what it means to you and the value that you are and the people that you work with, like try to bring to the table?
I mean, I really buy into the greater mission, which is, you know, that we need these new hunters and we need to pass these traditions on and we need to do it in a ethical way. And a way that teaches people a safe way to do things. Yeah. And then on a personal level, I wouldn't say it's maybe you can call it a mission, but you know, I strive to make sure that people are really getting a sense of community out of it. And I know that's really important for people to continue in their journey as a hunter, to feel like they have that support around them from their peers and from their mentors. And it's cool because we have mentors of all various stages. We have people who just started learning, you know, just got their first year last year. And then maybe people who have been doing it for 3, 4, 5 years and people 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And you get this layering effect. And it's really cool when everyone gets to sit down together and the stories we share and, you know, the food we share. And there's really nothing else like that. I really can't think of anything else like that. That, you know,
it's very unique. It is very unique. One of my best friends who, Tim Seesock, he's been on, like I said, he's one of my best friends. He's at my camp. We've gone on to hunt Utah together. We hunt camp together. I'm trying to think if we've hunted New York together. We just, you know, he's one of my best friends and he took out a new hunter out last year. I don't know what program he did. I'd have to ask him if he did your program or not. But I know it was a specific program because it allowed him to meet some people and he was able to go on a cool Florida turkey hunt this past spring where he ended up doing the whole Grand Slam thing and everything along those lines, which was kind of cool for him. But with that, how is it different from other R3 efforts? So like when I say R3, I know you know, but for the listener, like I'm meaning like recruitment, retention, and reactivation. Does it differ at all than any other programs?
There's a number of programs out there that are less intensive. That might just be like a one day, you kind of show up and you learn a few things and you go home, but you don't actually hunt necessarily. I would consider our Deer Hunting 101 course to be under the umbrella of R3. I mean, it is, but it's obviously it's online. You know, you don't have that in-person component. So Field of Fork is the most, I would say, intensive version of R3 that we're doing. But, you know, I think all of those various practices in combination are very helpful.
I like that. So to kind of wrap that whole thing up, like why is the food like feel like, I guess, well, let me ask you this, like what's that, why is that connection just so powerful for an entry point for these people?
Food is an entry point. I mean, because it's such a universal language. I mean, one of the ways that when Field of Fork first began, how we did mentee recruitment was by setting up tables at farmers markets and handing out venison samples. And, you have people who are going there to probably buy local meats and things like that. So you already have kind of like the right audience.
Yeah.
And it's just one more step. It's like, okay, here's an animal that maybe you haven't tried before. But, you know, food just speaks to people because it's, you can skip right over all of those things that people get hung up on. You know, are you trophy hunting, or, you know, obviously you didn't waste the meat. A lot of people assume that meat gets wasted and here you are serving it. So you can skip over a lot of those things that people get hung up on, and it just really brings people together. And then, you know, we have people go through the program and host venison dinner parties at their house for their friends and their family afterwards. And maybe surprising to a lot of people, not really surprising to me because I used to be vegetarian, but at these parties, they will, like, vegetarians will opt in to trying venison because they know where it came from. So they're not necessarily, they're not anti-hunting. They're just, you know, anti-factory farm. They want to see that ethical side into where that food came from. Right. And so, yeah, they're willing to kind of go outside the bounds of what is the norm for them and try something very new.
Yeah. So to kind of get down to the nitty gritty then, for like I asked you earlier, like how do I get better at it? And I just need to do it basically and put it on the calendar. How can experienced hunters be better mentors or be a part of the program?
Sure. Kip and I actually filmed a video on this not too long ago. It's on our YouTube. And basically, you just, you know, first of all, consider that everyone's hunting for a different reason. And, you know, you don't want to push people too hard in the direction that you want to go and kind of, you know, pay attention to what, you know, maybe you're like super into mature bucks and like that's all you ever want to hunt. But likely your new hunter is going to be very happy with a doe. So just keep that in mind. And, you know, if they don't get the big, you know, if they do get a buck and it's not the biggest one, it doesn't matter. It's their first deer. That's, you know, that's the point. That's the nugget that, you know, they're going to take home with them. And then, you know, just make them comfortable. You know, if they're cold, you know, have some hand warmers or something, or maybe an extra layer or something you can throw on them. If it's hot, you know, a bottle of water, snacks are always great, you know. It's like a surprise, like, oh, what's in their pack? You know, what are they going to bring out this time? Just, you know, being considerate, just being a decent human being, you know, stay away from politics and religion and all the divisive stuff, and just focus on what brings people together, which is the love and the joy of hunting.
So like when you do such a good impact, like taking these people out hunting, doing that, but now, like, what's your approach to get after that? Like feel like teaching them the field dress or cooking, what's that experience like for you?
Teaching them to field dress, Yeah, so a lot of people assume that it's going to be very difficult as a mentor to get their mentee to want to do that. But that's not actually what I've experienced. So what I've seen is that they mirror you. So if you are confident in, like, this is just what you do when you get a deer, like, this is what needs to happen, this is step two. They just take it in. They're like, okay, this is like the new norm. And, you know, just hand them some gloves and kneel down there and hand them the knife and point where to cut. And, you know, occasionally I will get the person who, you know, before they get their deer, they say, I can't do that. That, you know, if I get a deer, like, you're going to have to do that. I can't do that. But once they actually get the deer and you hand them the gloves and the knife and you just walk them through step by step, it just becomes very approachable, especially if you've demoed it first. But even if you haven't, I think it's just one of those things where you're immersed in the situation and you're just rolling with it because it's all new. I mean, just the fact that you just took down an animal, that's all new too. And it's like, okay, we're in new territory here, and we're just going to do things the way that this is supposed to happen.
Yeah, because that's where I think for myself, I want to learn from other individuals, like, to help my daughter out, like, where I cannot make it so overwhelming for her. Like, she's obviously seen the process, and she's seen me breaking down a deer in, say, in my garage after it's been hanging for a couple of days or things along those lines. But she hasn't been there for, like, that full field dress moment. And she's very interested and intrigued by it. But then at the same time, I don't know if she really is, just because of certain reactions I've gotten in the past. So, like, I want to make that where it's not overwhelming for that person. So, like, if you do have someone that, like, you're just saying, you know, like, I can't do that, and kind of, like, how do you take that approach to them, in a sense of, like you said, I know you just said you give them the gloves, all that stuff, but I'm sure it's, you know, you'd maybe talk to them, and do you ask them, like, okay, are you sure you don't want to do, like, is there any tips or tricks that you've learned that you could get them nudged in a little bit closer to want to do it, basically?
Yeah, so just being really gentle with them and taking it really slow and being really patient, and, you know, you're kind of checking in with them emotionally, just kind of like reading their face, and just taking it really slow. Like, it's not difficult to pick up a knife, so they can pick up the knife. It's not difficult to put on gloves, so it creeps in, and then all of a sudden they're like, all right, let's do this.
I like that. So we were just talking about food. What's your go-to meal that you love cooking for say new hunters or heck, even bringing in some NDA coworkers or anything along those lines? What's your go-to dish?
The meal that I've made probably for the most people is venison meatballs. And It's one of those things that, you know, people say, oh, I don't like venison. You know, I know what you do for a living, and that's cool and everything, but I don't like venison. And then you give them a meatball, and it's like, oh, I do like venison. I just didn't have it prepared right before, you know?
Yeah. I know. It's always the kicker. It's funny when you could do stuff like that, whether at parties or anything along those lines. And that's what's nice about where I live now here in Central PA. If I go to other family outings or things, there's always seems to be some sort of venison, like, side dish, whether it be someone might make like our 4th of July, where we go for our family, like, the first main dish and everything's, you know, your typical hot dogs, hamburgers, all that stuff. But then a little bit later on, I don't fill up too much because I know someone's throwing some deer steaks on the grill, and then that's what I'll end up, like, filling up more on. But it is fascinating when you are able to introduce other people to that. And that's even a great time for doing that, like, doing it then. And like you were saying, like, making meatballs. I love making, like, a shepherd's pie for us. And heck, even the simple things like tacos. I remember when my daughter was like 5 and she's like, tacos, like, she loved it. And it was just always venison meat. And, you know, she had no clue, basically. And still to this day, she loves it. So I do think, again, the food side is a lot more powerful than I think people realize, just because, like you said, it's a connection that we all share, right? And that is a big piece. And I feel like if you're able to give those individuals those great opportunities and an experience in the field, a little bit post, and then you would then extend it into the kitchen side of things, that's just a huge, huge win across the board. And it just opens up so much more opportunities, I think, for people, because then they're allowing themselves to maybe step outside of their comfort zone to do other things, you know, wanting to hunt more or trying new things for cooking, those type of things that it could really expand the horizon for other people. Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that. So how could other people get involved from the state of Pennsylvania with mentoring with the Field to Fork program?
Sure. On our website, we have a Field to Fork page, and on that page, you have the option to sign up as an interested new hunter or as a mentor or okay. landowner. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. There's a shortcut, fieldtofork.com will take you there, and you just put in a little bit of information, and that information goes then to me, and I can contact you and place you in an event around the state. Pennsylvania is rich with events, so mentor slots are filling up fast, but I think there are still a couple places where we could probably use some.
That's awesome. So I feel like I've seen it from the NDA before saying that we are in the good old days now, right? Like I feel like we have such a unprecedented era of opportunity, basically. So how do you get new hunters to understand that we are living in this really good time period for going out hunting and that it is critical for us to do so too?
Yeah, and I think Pennsylvania is maybe the greatest example of that. We have so many deer, and I'm in 5C, like you were talking, 5C is just overrun with deer. Actually, if you go on my Instagram yesterday, I just posted a reel. I went out back yesterday to practice with my longbow, and I'm only like 15 yards from the target. And I went to go grab my arrows, and a buck walked between me and the target. I had to wait for the buck to get out of the way so I could go get my arrows.
And then they're just everywhere. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then a doe like runs by him. And then another deer snuck up behind me, and I heard it blow and run. And I was like, oh my God, I'm surrounded. So we have a ton of opportunity. We have a ton of public land. We have a ton of deer. And it's crazy to me to think that there was a time in our country not too long ago where if you saw a deer, it would make the newspaper because they were that rare. That's crazy. I mean, we really are in the good old days in our age structure. Like if you're into, you know, mature buck hunting, it's the best it's ever been. I mean, it really is. I mean, and Pennsylvania is just such a great example of it. There's so much opportunity. So, yeah, I definitely relay that to people who are new to this world and maybe don't have that perspective.
Right. No, I've been asking, obviously, I asked Kip about it and other Pennsylvania hunters. How are you responding and excited, not excited for the Sunday hunting addition to our season? For me, like I was mentioning earlier too, being a teacher, I'm so excited about it. I've been a dead horse mentioning about it on the podcast. Are you excited for this opportunity?
I am excited. Actually, since working for the NDA, you know, my busy season tends to overlap with deer season. Mm-hmm. So it was hard for me to get out as it was. And then I did get into the ag tag program, though. So I have, nice. I can now hunt, you know, prior to and after the regular season. But it is kind of just like a peace of mind to know that I can go out and hunt and not have to be like, oh, wait, it's Sunday, I can't. You know, it was a kind of like an interruption in the thought process, of like the natural thought process of let's go hunting. And I'm so glad that we don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, for me, like I said, being the teacher, I don't get the vacation days or anything like that, obviously, because of the summer and everything like that. And just, you know, so you got to be picky on with certain things about when I could go. And it never failed. I remember I would take like might be lucky where we would be off on a Friday or something along those lines, and I'd be driving to Northeast PA and I'd be able to hunt, like, oh, I could hunt Friday evening and all day Saturday, and I would go and the weather would be miserable. I would only see like no deer or no shot opportunities, and then Sunday would just be absolutely perfect. Like, cameras would be going off. You just had that like crisp feeling in the air. Like, you just knew it was going to be a great day of deer hunting, and we couldn't do anything. It was just so deflating. Wow. And I mean, granted, the last couple of years we were gifted those three during the month of November, which was great. Like, if it served the purpose to an extent. But I never understood that side of things, and I'm so happy that it has, like other individuals across the state and other hunters. And, you know, Kip talked about it too, and it was a slight nugget in the back of my mind, but like hearing it from Kip and relighting that flame basically, but like, what an awesome thing for certain like small town, rural towns of our state, where now people are going to be able to have visit camp longer and want to go to maybe a camp longer. And you know, that drives some value and some money and opportunities into these rural towns across our state that I think is really, really beneficial and going to hopefully be really cool to see. So,
yeah.
And like, you know, not to go down rabbit holes of like what days are hunting and like any day to week, if it's a day where you don't want to go out, you just don't go out. That's the way I've always looked at it. It's just another day on where if you have other obligations, other things you would like to do, it's just like a Saturday or Friday. You just don't do it. So that's where I'm at with that type of stuff and everything along those lines. And now, Elizabeth, you touched upon like how when other mentors come back or people that participated when they come back the next year to maybe mentor and they might help out with some stewardship and do all that stuff at Habitat. When do you introduce that to maybe some of the individuals that are becoming a part of the program? Do you introduce topics like habitat management or herd health? Is that also being brought to their plate, basically their educational piece when you take them out?
Yeah, we definitely like these new hunters to have kind of like the wide angle perspective of how what they're doing fits into the bigger picture. So we often have hosts kind of talk about what the management goals are for their particular property. And, you know, it's easy to explain when you can talk, you can point out like, this is what a browse line looks like, and this is how this happens. And, you know, this is, all of these plants are invasive and they're not supposed to be here. Like, here's what should be here instead. And, you know, you can talk about, you know, overpopulation, how that connects to starvation and disease and all these things. And people get it really quickly. Right. And, you know, it's really eye-opening. So I like to have the landowners and the hosts talk about those things. And if we're lucky enough to have a property that, you know, is stewarded by someone who really, you know, has gone through our deer steward program and really right. knows what they're doing, to see like how far you can take a place and its potential and look at the quality of the deer there and all the wildlife, you know, turkeys and, you know, the songbirds, everything. It's just really cool to have that example to physically put in front of people.
Yeah. Wonderful. Two last questions and they're going to be story oriented. Have you seen any friendships or even careers sparked through the Field to Fork program?
Well, definitely friendships. New careers. I don't know about that. I know everyone wants it to be their career once they participate. Yeah, I mean, I've had people, you know, email me quite recently saying, you know, I'm, you know, a school teacher said, you know, I want to quit working as a school teacher, and I really want to pursue my dream of working in the conservation space. And, you know, can I be a Field to Fork coordinator, or can I intern for you? So there's interest. And we do want to create more of these positions around the country. It's just a matter of, you know, going through the process with the state agencies and things, but definitely friendships. Oh my God, friendships. You know, my best friends now are from this program. So yeah, definitely. Yeah,
That's pretty cool. And then the last one, give me a real fun hunting story from yourself.
Oh boy.
A good memorable hunt.
So this is actually not a deer hunt, but it is an offshoot of the Field of Four program. So when I first started working for the NDA, being a newish adult hunter, I didn't have a lot of hunting connections. Mm-hmm. And, a big part of my job was to recruit mentors for these programs. And I was like, where am I going to find these people? I don't know anybody. So I was going on Facebook and just like friend requesting everybody. And just, thousands of people. And some people, accepted. And one person in particular, Ben Michaels, he said, I don't normally accept like friend requests from random people, but I looked at your profile and you look like an okay person. So, okay. And we started messaging a little bit, and then I got him to come out and mentor at one of our programs. And not too long after that, he said he was going on this pig hunting trip to Oklahoma, and they had a spot open up. So they like to go with three people and rotate drivers because it's such a long drive. And they're like, we need a third driver now. Do you want to, he said, I feel like I can spend 18 hours in the car with you without going crazy. So I accepted. And that is now an annual tradition that we go out there. It's so much fun. Thousands of acres and just all kinds of wildlife. And it's beautiful. Yeah, I love it.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So one last one, for your position with where you're at, do you set any specific goals or ambitions that you have for the 2025, 2026 year for yourself?
For myself, for my position?
Yeah. Or even for the program, anything along those lines, anything that you could share along that.
Sure. I mean, we're always looking to expand the number of state dedicated coordinators that we have, because it makes the work of expanding Field of Fork so much easier to have that kind of tree of people. I'm up here and kind of spread the work and have them reach out to all these assorted landowners and hosts and people with all kinds of questions, and having that support structure in place is really helpful. So if we could add a few more states in, that'd be great.
Yeah. Youngest and oldest person that participated in the Field of Fork.
Let's see. Field of Fork technically is an adult program. So, but occasionally, we're partnering with people who have already accepted youth into the program. So I would say youngest is probably 12. Mm-hmm. And oldest that I'm aware of was Nina's mom, who was 71, 72. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. That's so cool. So what are the plans for this year for yourself?
For myself? Well, AgTech season started August 1st, but I haven't gotten a chance to go out yet, but hopefully soon. So definitely taking advantage of that. We talked about 5C being rich with deer. So I want to load up on 5C tags and not only use, whatever ag tags I get on these farms, but whatever, extra regular tags I can get and use them on these farms as well. It's kind of a shame that hunting is actually restricted where I live, in this little borough. We're allowed to hunt up on like the mountain, but that's not really where the deer are congregated so much. There's a few up there. So, anything I can do, any access I can get in 5C, I'm all for it. But hey, I do have a couple different farms that I help out on, and that keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Elizabeth, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on, help spreading the word of what you and your coworkers are doing at the NDA, especially with your Field of Fork program and other programs that you're running. Is there any other plug for the other programs that you're a part of or doing that you would like to talk about?
Sure. I did mention Deer Hunting 101. If people are interested in taking an online course, it's very comprehensive, how to learn to hunt. We have it hosted on Today's Hunter. But you just Google Deer Hunting 101 and the course will come up, and it's not that expensive, pretty cheap. but that can really help someone get started if they are unable to attend a mentored hunt. You know, there's limited space in the program. So we have a number of ways people can get started. And of course, you know, go on our blog. We have all sorts of articles on how to get started as a hunter.
All right. Last one that you were talking about, like how other states could be involved and expand that tree for directory. Is there anybody other than yourself for the state of Pennsylvania that people could look towards, or where do they need to go for that on the website?
For Pennsylvania, currently it is me. Okay. I was formerly the Pennsylvania Field of Four coordinator. Now I'm director of hunter recruitment. So I oversee all states, but I happen to live in Pennsylvania, and I.
So you're the one.
I built the state program up myself, so I'm still very connected to all these events. It's me.
Okay. Easy enough, right? Awesome, mm-hmm. Elizabeth. Well, again, thank you so much. Where can people find you, either through social media, email, anything along those lines?
Sure. I have, if you want to contact me through email. I think all our contact information is on our staff page on the website, but it's elizabeth@deerassociation.com. I'm on Instagram as elizabeth_clegg_NDA, something like that. Just search my name. I'm on Facebook too. Same thing.
Awesome. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much. Best of luck to you and everybody a part of your program this year. Hopefully this is an opportunity for me to get my butt back into gear, like I said, of being a part of something like this. And I know how much fun Tim had and the enjoyment that he had during his time with you, a part of that as well. So it sounded really cool and just something I want to be a part of. So hopefully I could do a better job of that. And if you're listening, you know, think about how, you know, not necessarily maybe getting out there, but maybe talking to somebody first. And that might be your way of getting your feet wet and then wanting to take somebody out. Really great programs. Elizabeth's done, again, like she said, she built it up here in the state. And it's very popular that I know, like she mentioned, mentors or spots are filling up already. We're not even in the month of September as we record this. So please check this out. Check out the program Field of Fork. Check NDA out as well. So thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week, everybody. Antler up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler up.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.